It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome back to Money for Lunch, guys. Hey, it is an extraordinary day here in Arizona, at least in the part that I live in the Phoenix market, because we got this thing called rain, and it's rained actually twice in 24-hour period. It rained for about 10 minutes yesterday, and it rained for about 10 minutes this morning. I know most places, that's not even a mention, you know, but to us, it's like a big deal. We get 3 inches of rain a year, and so, you know, it's the only place I've ever witnessed that when it starts raining, people actually go to their windows to look at it. So I'm at the gym yesterday working out, and sure enough, it starts raining. And, it, you know, when it rains here in Arizona, it will only rain for about 10 minutes, but it's it does pour. It is a fantastic amount of, of rain. It does pour in sheets. And so we get these things called flash floodings, and people get stranded, and it's, you know, and it even creates little, you know, it even creates mudslides, so it is kind of a weird phenomenon. But like I tell you, it's kind of a cool thing. I've lived in multiple places, and sure enough, as the rain started to pour, you had people literally just going to the windows to look at it as though they've not ever seen it, or maybe the reality is we just don't see it very often, so hey, why not go take a look at it? All right, I want to talk about this. This is just driving me crazy. I don't know if you've got, you guys seen this. The lady's name is Shanine Allen, and she was pulled over for a traffic violation, and she, bless her heart, she volunteered that and she was pulled over in New Jersey. She's a Philly girl, and so she volunteered the police officer that she was carrying a legally owned handgun with a Pennsylvania permit. Now, that in most cases doesn't mean anything, but in New Jersey they arrested her, and she is now battling the stupid law they have in New Jersey because her permit is not recognized in New Jersey. So she is looking at a 3-year sentence. And by the law, luck of the draw, she is being prosecuted by the same judge and the same prosecutor that allowed Ray Rice, the accused, I guess he's convicted now, but anyway, accused slash convicted wife beater, to essentially be put on a first-timers program. He's doing probation. And so just real quick, Ray Rice beat his wife unconscious in a public place, beat her unconscious in an elevator. And again, this New Jersey Superior Court judge, Michael Donio, allowed him to be put on probation, first-time offenders program. Now, you have Shanine Allen, a single mother of two, who has a permit to carry a gun, and they're prosecuting her all the way. They refuse to give her the first-time program. And it's just gone crazy. So why do I bring this up? First of all, because it's alarming. It's just wrong. So it's okay to, bottom line is, carrying a gun, carrying a legally permitted gun, which it's way worse than beating your wife. I don't get that. So we've contacted the judge, of course, and the prosecutor, and I should say, of course, they have not responded. We have later on the show, we have New Jersey Assemblyman Ronald Dancer, who is sponsoring a bill called the Shanine's Law to try to get some help to this family, because it's ridiculous that you can't carry a permitted gun in New Jersey. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you know, it's New Jersey. I don't know. It just doesn't make sense. Tell me what you think. Send me an email, a Twitter, or Facebook, and let's talk about what's happening there in New Jersey. I just can't believe this hasn't made it onto, what's that program called? Jersey Shore? I don't know. I don't even know that show's even on anymore. Okay. Well, enough of that. Let's get down to something that's going to be helpful to everybody. So while you're thinking about all that stuff, let's talk about John Nemo. John Nemo is our first guest. He's one of our regular contributors. Not only is he fun every time he comes on the show, but if you're a regular listener to Money for Lunch, you know who John Nemo is. He's the expert when it comes to leveraging LinkedIn to generate sales leads, add clients, and increase revenue for your business. What you may not know, and what John revealed the last time he was on the show, is that he has a brand new book and website coming out that I couldn't be more intrigued and excited about it. It's called Fired Up. And it's all about igniting your passion, doing work you love, and crafting a legacy that goes beyond spreadsheets or sales awards. You can learn more about Fired Up Live at firedoplive.com. And the book is due out this fall. I'd like to welcome our regular contributor, John Nemo, back to Money for Lunch. Welcome, John.
Hey, Bert. Good to be on. I'm not carrying any firearms, so I should be covered for this segment, all right?
Well, now you're in Minnesota, aren't you? Someplace, you're out in some frigid area, I remember.
Yeah, I'm in Minnesota. I used to live in Phoenix, so I was laughing at your intro about the rain because I remember that. And, you know, I said, you guys think the rain is special. I got snow. Come on over, you know. So that's
yeah.
Great. But, no, great to be back on and excited to chat with you as always.
All right, let's jump into this. I want to start talking about something I find very interesting. What you said, a longtime executive told you about fear the other day. Walk us through this this fear thing, this fear quote.
Right. So one of the things ever since I started, you know, the way I've been unrolling Fired Up is doing some different guest blogging and posting some of the content. And what's amazing to me, Bert, is how it resonates with people. And I get these emails from all over the country, and I got one yesterday from an executive in Houston. He works for a big software kind of giant, and he's been doing it for 14 years, and he said, you know, I felt motivated to write you because I just feel trapped. I'm fearful, right? I make a ton of money. I have a good life, but I feel, you know, like I'm not doing what I was meant to do, what I really am passionate about, and I just have fear around, A, leaving a safe job, but the thing that really intrigued me that seems to resonate with a lot of people is he said, B, I don't really know how to figure out what my passion is and then how to monetize that. And it was just it's something that really struck a chord with me because everyone I know in some form of business or another struggles with that very – am I really doing what I feel like I was put on this earth to do? And one of the, you know, the key things about Fired Up is, you know, I really believe this with my heart, that if you're not doing – what you're gifted at, what I, you know, you feel like you were put on this earth to do, the rest of us are suffering as a result, right? I mean, it's the equivalent of, you know, Mozart not making music, right? Or Bert Martini
right.
not doing radio. You know, so it's a thing that, you know, I love with Fired Up, being able to walk people through it and helping them understand how to tap into what those passions are and then more importantly, how to monetize them.
Yeah, you know, it's I like that because so many people do go around being miserable because they're not doing what they love. What's the, you know, what's the old adage, you know, that most of us live a life of quiet desperation?
Absolutely. And so, you know, what I told this guy, this executive in Houston, was, you know, it's pretty simple to figure out what your passion is. What I do is I actually walk people in my Fired Up coaching program or the training program that's coming out, kind of walk you back through, like, what did you love to do as a kid, right? What were the things that
right.
attracted you? And so one of the things, even as you look through your career, what were the highlights, what were the moments you enjoyed most? And one of the things I think where people get trapped is in this all or nothing thing of, well, I'm convinced I can only do this, right? And so even in my own story, I look at when I was 25 and I actually was working out in Arizona for the Arizona Republic, I was convinced I wanted to be a newspaper reporter and cover sports for the rest of my life, right? By the time I was 30, I was convinced I wanted to be in a rock band and be a professional musician. By the time I was 35, I was convinced I wanted to leave my day job and start a marketing company, right? And now I'm getting close to 40, and I'm convinced more than ever that I want to be a speaker, an author, and a coach. And, you know, if you look at that on the surface, Bert, right, it's all these different professions. It doesn't seem to make any sense. But when I look back at my story, I see those high points, those real passionate moments, all had a real creative thread or theme in them, which was I love storytelling. I love to be creative. I love to be in front of an audience, right, on stage or performing or writing or entertaining. And, you know, I love to be very transparent and sharing and lifting people up. And it was like I finally kind of found that calling, right? And that's what I'm doing now with Fired Up. And it's the same for anyone else, right? You have to kind of tap into your gifting and your desires. And once you figure that out, once you see those themes from your childhood, your life, your career, your hobbies, then we can start working with you on monetizing that. And let me unroll that really quickly with a different example, right? I had somebody email me the other day. A gal emailed me the other day who's stuck in a dead-end corporate job, miserable. And I just asked that question, what are your hobbies? What are your passions? Oh, I love to travel. I love to travel. I wish I could travel the world. And I sat there and I thought, and we're living in the year 2014, and you're telling me you can't create an online travel blog that would have sponsorships. You couldn't do a travel podcast that you'd get paid money for sponsors. You couldn't do travel books or videos or guides. Like, you've got a whole business sitting there, right?
Right.
You carry a portable television studio in your pocket on all your trips. It's called your iPhone. And you can produce these incredible videos and photos and tap into your passion. And then you can even create online courses walking people through how to do Hawaii on a budget, you know, or whatever it might be. And those are the types of things that, Bert, when I talk to these people, you can just see the light bulb go off over their head of, you know, oh, my gosh, I didn't realize this was possible. And that's the other thing with Fired Up is we live in a time of unprecedented opportunity. Like these, all the gates are gone, right? It used to be you needed a TV studio or a camera crew to do these things. And if you think about this intersection of technology and the internet and social media, it really has made the sky the limit. And I think what holds people back the most in business is just we're not used to that, right? We're all programmed, especially those of us my age, you know, almost 40, who grew up in a different era, right, who grew up without that. Really difficult to break out of that. But that is the key, and that goes back to that executive in Houston. And once you figure that out, there really is no longer an excuse for not being able to monetize those different passions.
Absolutely. You know what, and I want to point this out. The recipe you just gave, okay, for this travel blog really is for any subject matter. I mean, I'm thinking, look, easily health and fitness, cooking, technology-related fields, business-related field. I have a client of mine who makes a fortune, and she has her entire business, the first one that she launched, her first blog was all about keeping your houseplants alive. I mean, you can get pretty niche down, and as long as you're passionate about it, people are going to come to you. Now, if you are passionate about, I don't know, drawing on rice, on little pieces of rice, then your market might be smaller than somebody who's going to be talking about traveling the world or traveling or health and fitness or houseplants. But bottom line is, I love what you're talking about because, you know, we have no excuse because we have everything available to us. Like you said, the TV show is in our phone, or the ability to create a TV show is right there in our phone, and we have so many places that we can produce it or distribute it that, having a radio show or a podcast or whatever, creating all this content and using it, it's so much simpler than it was when you and I were growing up, when all those things had so many layers of gatekeepers and, you know, trying to get a book published was incredibly difficult. Even if you were going to self-publish, it was incredibly difficult. Now today, you know, freak, man, you can jump on there and have something published, you know, literally within just weeks if you're organized and ready to go. You know, so I love this recipe because anybody listening to it right now who's fired up about a particular situation can really learn how to monetize it and start creating, if anything, start creating a second revenue stream that may kick in a you know, in a few months or a few years. But bottom line is you're creating your dream life by creating the stuff that you're talking about.
Right, and that's the key, Bert, is what you just said. You can scale it up. It's not like you have to make a scary jump. The ability with technology in the 24/7 world is you can start all this online and on the side, right? And then you can kind of build it to the point or test it to the point where you can get investors or test it to the point where you now believe I've got a product that will sell, right? This coaching class or this, you know, video series on houseplant maintenance. And the thing is, the number one piece of advice, you know, I just want to share this today. It's the biggest tip I give people because I was on LinkedIn, right, and I was scanning through all the articles and all the content, and I was thinking the problem we have with people failing at these opportunities is they're rushing all their content out there. And what I mean by that is there's so much noise, right, and everybody's kind of copying different formulas and ideas and patterns. But the real success that I've had as a business owner with Fired Up, with my LinkedIn program, LinkedIn Riches, is putting out really, really incredible content and really personal content. Because, again, if you want LinkedIn training, there's 100 different people you can go to get LinkedIn training and insight. I'm only one. But the only difference I really have is me, right? My personality, the way I teach it. There's a million self-improvement people, right? Tony Robbins, all these people all over the world that you can follow. It's not like Fired Up has the market cornered on how to get your, you know, dream life and job. But as I was telling my wife, because we were talking about it, and she said, well, how are you going to be any different than the other 100 books on the bookshelf? And I said, because it's me, because it's my story, because I will resonate with a certain audience in a way that no one else can, right? And that's the key, Bert, is understanding – you know, really understanding you're going to attract the right people and you're going to repel the people that don't want to do business with you anyway, right? And so
And you know what, and I want to kind of interrupt a little bit here and talk about this. This is no different than if you think of your favorite movie star. If you think of, look how many action heroes there are out there and how many actors they are out there, okay? And so when an actor that resonates with you is in a movie, you will go see them regardless of the movie. Now, if there are certain actors that repel you, you won't go see them, period. And so some people love Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'm a big Schwarzenegger fan, and I will go see a Schwarzenegger movie. And some people don't like him. They won't go. It doesn't matter. You still put your stuff out there and attract the people that are going to be attracted to you and repel those that aren't, and that's why it works. That's why you can have multiple movies about the same subject matter but with different actors, and they all do well. And that's why, you know, to your point, you can have multiple books on the same subject matter and they all do well because, again, people are going after your personality, and after a while that John Nemo brand name sticks out and they go, oh, John Nemo, you know, I'll buy it. They won't even think twice. They're now a John Nemo fan, and anything with your name on it is going to probably make it to their library as soon as possible because they're hooked.
Right, and what I have found is, you know, it's no secret, business and sales. We connect with personalities, and we connect with stories. And so the biggest advice I can give people, whether you want to find a job working for a certain company or organization, whether you want to be on your own as an entrepreneur, is really building your personal brand and telling a story, right? This is the narrative. This is my story. I have a narrative, Bert, right? When I talk to people about my background, I have a personal story that resonates, that helps them remember me, and I have all these stories I've told about, you know, being memorable, right? And good salespeople know this. It's more about the relationships, the personalities, the, you know, the personal branding than it is necessarily even about the product sometimes. And so to kind of bring this full circle and to bring in LinkedIn into this, That's one of the
I was going to ask you, yeah, how do we bring Link into this? Because, you know, obviously, this is what one of the things that you're most well-known for. You created the best-selling course, LinkedIn Riches. So talk about how we bring Link into all this.
Right. One of the keys with this is understanding, especially for those people listening that maybe don't necessarily want to go out on their own and start a whole new company. Maybe they want to find someone who wants to hire them to do their passion. They'll think that's where LinkedIn comes in, because not only do you have this ability with LinkedIn, you know, over 300 million people, one out of every three professionals is on LinkedIn, you have that ability to instantly find, filter, and connect with either your ideal audience or your ideal employer. And the next step beyond that is, you know, not just throwing your virtual resume on the table, so to speak, when you connect with these people, it's providing like that value, that personality, that story that's going to hook them, right? All the jobs I ever got between probably 2008 and 2012 before I went on my own, I got through LinkedIn. I didn't get through the gatekeeper process. You know, I got it through impressing people with a LinkedIn profile that stood out, that was different, that had personality. And so, you know, where you use LinkedIn today is, again, as a personal branding tool, right? Here's who I am. Here's my story. Here's the value and benefit I bring to my employers, my customers. Here's my passion, right? None of us, I just had this discussion the other day with an executive about vendors, right? And it was like, none of us want to work with a vendor who isn't fired up about us, right? Who isn't fired up about our industry, you know? You can't fake that stuff. And so the more you use LinkedIn, A, to find the people you want to connect with, but B, to bring some personality to it. Because you've got to stand out. You've got to be personable. And LinkedIn now gives you these amazing tools where you can instantly add video to your profile. You can add images. You can add blog posts. LinkedIn is very much becoming a quote-unquote social network where we're bringing more personality to it. LinkedIn used to really just be, you know, an electronic version of your resume, you know, almost like a job board. And it's really done this 180 where now – it's much more personable, not like fun like Facebook. You're not going to find a lot of cat photos or videos, right? But again, it's you know, bringing in that key that we're talking about, Bert, which is personality, charisma, passion. And then the other big thing with it is demonstrating that. Using LinkedIn's publishing platform to have your own blog on LinkedIn. Here's my passion about travel, and here's my three tips, and really impressing an employer, because that's one of the things you can do. You want to work for that company. Write a blog on LinkedIn and send it to their leadership saying, here's five things I would do to improve this area of your company. They're going to love you because it's all about them and it's demonstrating your expertise. You're a self-starter. You're bringing ideas to the table. They're going to be very intrigued and excited. And even if they don't hire you, one of their competitors might see that post and go, wow, we've got a lot of good ideas about our industry in this industry segment. Let's talk to this guy. And that's how
absolutely. I love it. John, we're out of time. The book is called Fired Up, and the website is firedup.live.com. John Nemo, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
You bet, Bert. Thanks.
All righty. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there by John Nemo about getting fired up about what's your passion and not letting fear dominate your life and really kind of breaking out of that box that you think you might be stuck in. Anyway, we're going to take a quick commercial break. And we're going to come back, and we'll be talking to Dominic Bianca right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went
through?
This is so cool.
This is so cool. You want to try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Caller Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. My next guest, Dominic Bianca, best-selling author Dominic Bianca, who is a Louisiana personal injury and workers' compensation attorney, is going to join us here and talk about his best-selling book, Knockout Strategies for Health, Wealth, and Success. Dominic Bianca, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hello there, Bert.
Hey, man. So welcome to the show. Good to have you on.
Well, good. Good to be on. I'm connected with you then, I take it.
All right, so let's talk about this. In your book, you discuss how to be successful with insurance claim, and you and here you are, your attorney, and part of your discussion is you may not even need an attorney. So specifically discuss this and kind of walk us through this process.
Bert, that's right. I'm an attorney, and I'm not a TV lawyer. Okay, I guess that's one of the things I want to get straight. I am a personal injury attorney, and I have a different approach on the way that I practice and a different approach on the way that I handle things. And one of the things that I do is I make sure that the prospective clients or anyone that I talk to knows that they may not need a lawyer. And I meet with a lot of people that I just simply turn away and say, hey, look, you can handle these things on your own, and you don't need to spend the money on a lawyer to handle these things. Sometimes a lot of the lawyers out there, some of the TV lawyers who do what I do, which is some of the personal injury work that I do, will convince people that they need a lawyer no matter what. And that's just not the case. It's just not the case.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Now, all right, so let me ask you this. Tell us a little bit about your background, because, you know, my understanding is, you know, you come from a working-class family like most of us do. You went to LSU, and then you graduated from LSU, and then you didn't jump right into law school. You took some time off. And so what brought you back into the area of law? What was the inspiration?
Well, I was working out there, and I was actually assisting lawyers doing some of the work that they do. I was a legal investigator. But one of the things that kind of pushed me to go back to school and get a law degree was the fact that there were a lot of people out there that needed help, and I had experienced a number of situations where some of the lawyers just really weren't helping people from the aspect of what I do, which is teach people. And that's one of the things that I promoted in my book is that, hey, what we do is we get involved and we help teach our prospective clients some of the things that they need to know. So, one, to determine if they need a lawyer or not, and two, to help them better understand where they're going and what we might be able to do for them. I really feel that I'm a teaching lawyer, and I'm known as a teaching lawyer, and I kind of feel like that I promote myself as a teaching lawyer.
Okay, so explain this to me. When you say you consider yourself a teaching lawyer, what does that mean?
Well, I have people who come and sit down and talk to me, and they have talked to other attorneys, have spoken with other attorneys, and they lay out these factual scenarios that are going left and right and up and down and so much information. They just like regurgitate everything that has happened to them, and I have got to teach them how to focus. I've got to teach them to put on those blinders. And I do this by an analogy. And one of the things I do through the analogy is, we're down here in South Louisiana, and we're not far from New Orleans. And if you've ever been down to New Orleans, you've been down to the French Quarter. And when you go in the French Quarter, they have these buggies that are pulled by, used to be horses, now they're mules, I guess. And they have these things on their eyes, and we've all seen them, and we've seen them at the racetracks or what have you. And I asked my clients, say, hey, what are these things on these horses' eyes, and what are they for? And they say, well, you know, I'm not really sure. And they're blinders. And what they do is they're there to keep the animal from looking left and the animal from looking right, and to keep that animal focused and straightforward. So that's one of the first things I do when I get involved with someone and have someone sit down with me, is I teach them how to focus. I teach them to do those things that we learn as lawyers through our training in law school and through our practice, is that you've got to filter out some of the things that just aren't important and pay attention to what's important and focus on that, and that helps any individual take almost any legal scenario or situation where they might need a lawyer and clarify it. And once those issues are clarified, then you can get down to the root of the problem and start figuring out what needs to be done to solve the problem. And a lot of problems can be solved without the interjection of an attorney.
Right. Well, you know what, and first of all, I like the whole blinders idea. I think nowadays we probably could all use some blinders, at least a few hours out of each day, because, you know, between our phones going off and our Facebook, and, you know, we're literally becoming this generation that all of us are suffering from some type or some level of HDD, right? And so having blinders on, not to focus just on this legal issue at hand, but to focus on some, you know, on maybe on your job, on your health, on your relationship. We all need to put some blinders on. So I like that analogy. And you know, what's interesting, too, about you being a teaching attorney is that the reality is that, you know, way back in the day, you know, anybody could really – become an attorney. It's not as complicated as it is today, and for good reasons. I mean, there's obviously reasons today why you need to be, you know, go through the training required and be able to pass the, you know, the LSAT to get in and the bar to get, you know, to start practicing. All that stuff's important. But back in the day, it was, it really was about giving everybody a fair chance in the courthouse, and now today it's not that way. Now, I mean, I've seen people who, you know, could not afford an attorney, who had no help, who, even though the law was on their side, they didn't know how to articulate that. They didn't know how to put things into evidence. You know, there's a specific, at least in my experience, there's a specific way of getting, you know, your evidence read into the case or whatever, and some people don't know how to do that, and because you don't know how to do that, then essentially you're not really showing any evidence, and therefore it can't be weighed and all that other stuff. So I like the fact that you're willing to teach your clients some of these things, because it is important for them to know what's going on, and then they themselves can say, you know, Dominic, this is probably a little bit more than I want to bite off. Can you help me? I mean, because ultimately, by teaching them, you're really building trust. You're building that relationship, which is what everything's about.
That's correct, Bert. Look, one of the things that you talked about is, hey, how do you get these evidentiary hurdles? How do you do this procedurally correct? And when I get involved with a client or a person who has a legal issue, we're way before we get to the point where we enter the courthouse. And
right.
When a person gets to the point where they need to enter the courthouse, depending upon the complexity of the problem, that's when they need to have an attorney, and they need to have someone there who knows that system. But what's important is what you said, is there are certain ways that you can present yourself, present information to whatever type of legal situation you're trying to resolve, be it a car wreck, be it a family dispute where the, you know, trying to figure out custody of the children or things like that, that people generally work out on their own. They work them out through compromise. And if you know how to formulate the concepts that you're trying to relay, and if you, I go about teaching people how to do this, a lot of times, like you said, they realize that, you know, at this juncture, I don't need an attorney, but when the time comes, you appear to be the subject matter expert in this particular area, and I trust you because you're willing to take that time. and you're willing to do those things to help those to help me out as a person that needs help, and that helps build the business. And that's one of the things that I can relay to your listeners is one of the things that I think the public is starving for is information, and we live in this information age. I every night I go to bed with my iPad, and I'm not promoting iPads. My tablet, I guess I should say, and I cruise the internet, and I read stuff, and I learn stuff, and I think that's what our society is becoming. The next generation here, the millenniums, is that what they're called? That's what it's all about. Information. It's all about education. It's all about, hey, if I can learn how to do this, I can do it on my own. And you know, one of the things, and this is digressing a little bit, I'm building a house. And when I tell people I'm building a house, they say, oh, great, you're building a house. You got a contractor. I say, no, you don't understand. I'm building a house. I'm building a damn house. And I do that, and it kind of goes back in round circle that I come from a blue-collar background, and I'm doing these things to get back to that. I grew up with a construction family, family-hood construction company, not a large company, very small company, actually. And one of the things I'm doing out there on this house that I'm building is I'm doing a lot of the manual labor, and it helps me get back in touch with those things that my clients are dealing with. And if I can say this to any of your listeners out there, anyone who's in business, anyone who's starting a business, is you've got to get your hands dirty. You've got to get out there, and you've got to do those things to help you understand what your prospective clients, your customers, or the people you're going to be serving or dealing with, what are they dealing with? So I'm building this house, and of course I can't do some of the specialized stuff, but I do a lot of the manual labor out there, and that kind of helps me gear myself into understanding what a certain segment of my clientele is, which is injured workers. And that's where my passion lies, because I've seen a lot of people out there who have been injured on the job, and they don't have anywhere else to turn, and they don't have the education, they don't have the knowledge that they need to be able to put the pieces back together and know how to deal with the insurance adjusters and know how to deal with the different adversities that face them. And I can help them do that, and when I help them do that, I sleep better at night, and I know that I'm setting them on the right path. So I know I've kind of...
I love it. Hey, Dominic, we're out of time. But great stuff. Love to have you back another time and talk more about not just the law, but business in general. Dominic Bianca, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
All right. Thank you, Bert.
You bet. Guys, we're off and running. Great stuff there from Dominic Bianca about, you know, really getting to know your customers, getting on their level, and really coming from a place of mentor and teaching. What a great way to build your brand and your customers. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, Ron Dancer, assemblyman from New Jersey, talking about a very interesting case. You're going to want to stay tuned.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back. My next guest, Assemblyman Ronald S. Dancer. Ron Dancer has served in the New Jersey legislation since 2002. He presently serves as the Tourism, Gaming, and the Arts Committee, on the Tourism, Gaming, and the Arts Committee, the Agriculture and Natural Resource Committee, and the Labor Committee. Mr. Dancer served as the mayor of Plumstead Township for 22 years through 1990, from 1990 through 2011, and continues to volunteer as the township's business administrator. He's employed with the Ocean County's Adjuster's Office. Mr. Ron Dancer, Assemblyman Ron Dancer, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Bert, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
You know what, and I appreciate you making time to come on the show. I am so concerned about this, and I want you to kind of enlighten our listeners. You are sponsored a bill for this young lady called Shanine Allen. I believe that's how you pronounce her first name, Shanine Allen. And why don't you tell everybody what is going on with Shanine and Shanine's Law?
This is a very interesting case, I think, not only in New Jersey, but I think has national interest and national implications. And it calls into question the scales of justice. Are they really balanced? What we have here is a young black woman, a mother of two. She's a working mother of two. And she is a resident of Pennsylvania, living in the city of Philadelphia. She's traveling to New Jersey, to Atlantic City, and she is has in her purse a legally registered handgun for the state of Pennsylvania. She comes into the state of New Jersey. There's a minor traffic violation. She's pulled over by a police officer. I think it had something to do with a lane change. But she's pulled over by the officer. And here's a woman that has no criminal record. She volunteers to the police officer information that as she's getting her driver's license and registration, by the way, I have here a permit to carry my handgun for protection from Pennsylvania, showed the officer the permit, showed to the officer that, as a matter of fact, because she had been robbed just recent to this and she got a handgun for protection, she showed him the date of sale. She owned it approximately 1 week. In the state of New Jersey, unfortunately, is one of the states of 30, there's 30 states in the nation that have reciprocity or will recognize and accept the permit from Pennsylvania with respect to firearms and handguns. However, New Jersey does not have reciprocity nor recognize handgun permits from any state in the nation, and you must have a license to carry permit for the state of New Jersey if you come into New Jersey with a firearm. And what happened, of course, the officer, after she volunteered the information, said unfortunately that he would have to take her in. There's a violation of law in New Jersey. You don't have a New Jersey permit. Now, ironically, she had a Pennsylvania driver's license that allowed her to cross the state line. That's recognized in New Jersey. But this young lady, she had her legal, registered, permitted handgun, and unfortunately, New Jersey doesn't recognize that. As a result, the officer took her to the station. She was arrested. She on, let's see, it was just on August the 5th. She had a hearing in Atlantic County near Atlantic City there that she had a judge and a prosecutor. Unfortunately, she was not offered a what we call a pretrial intervention program, which anyone in the state of New Jersey is eligible for as long as you have no criminal record. First time offense, you would be eligible for pretrial intervention, and then you would not have to go to court and face sentencing. It would be a pretrial intervention program. The prosecutor and the judge in Atlantic County denied her that opportunity. She spent 46 days in jail. She didn't have the means, although she works two jobs. She's a medical professional, phlebotomist, by the way, and she just didn't have the money to make her bail, and she spent 46 days while family members had to care for her two children. She comes up to a hearing, and at the hearing, unfortunately, the prosecutor would not consider the pretrial program, which I want to let your listeners know, Bert, that at about the same time, there was a National Football League player by the name of Ray Rice. Ray Rice. And Ray Rice is a running back for the Baltimore Ravens. And about the same time, he appeared before the same Atlantic County judge and Atlantic County prosecutor. And this is an individual that anyone who read a lot of the national news accounts, it was on video that he assaulted. He actually beat his wife unconscious.
Knocked her unconscious.
And then drugged her.
Yes.
Yeah, and drug her from the elevator. This is all on videotape from an Atlantic City casino to the car. Now, he did appear before the same judge and the same prosecutor. And this is why I'm calling – I think this calls into question the scales of justice here. Are they balanced? Because the Shanine Allen case, she was not offered the same opportunities as, for example – there seems to be no program here, like a pretrial program, for the woman gun owner. But there is for the woman beater. I think that just brings something into question here. And what happened with the Ray Rice case is that he was given by that prosecutor the opportunity not have to go to trial, have no court a sentencing record, but went into the pretrial intervention program. Unlike Shanine Allen. And
right.
Quite honestly, that was an impetus for me to draft legislation for the state of New Jersey that will try to balance the scales of justice here. And what my legislation does is that it would provide the court or a judge with discretion, because right now in the state of New Jersey, this woman – and anyone else under similar circumstances faces a mandatory minimum 3.5 years in prison, and there is no discretion for the judge here, no discretion. And my law, the legislation that I have introduced, and we do call it Shanine's law, there are three conditions. If they are met, you would qualify for a pretrial intervention program, just like Ray Rice did. So I'm amending
right.
the law in New Jersey. Yes, Bert.
Go ahead.
I'm amending the law in the state of New Jersey.
Then I have a couple of questions. Go ahead.
Surely. I'll finish up here. But these are the important three points in the legislation. Number one, if you are an individual that has no criminal record, and if you are in compliance with your home state gun laws, and thirdly and finally, that you have no known association or affiliation with a street gang, you meet those three conditions, the court, under if this legislation is signed by Governor Christie in the state of New Jersey, the court would then have discretion. The judge would have discretion to say, I am going to place you in a pretrial intervention program. You have no criminal record. You're in compliance with your home state gun laws. You have no affiliation with a street gang. There are the three conditions, and then I believe justice would prevail. That's really the reason I've introduced this legislation.
Okay, so first of all, God bless you for doing that. I mean, you know, this is I'm grateful for you taking time to help out this young lady, because, I mean, first of all, she's not from New Jersey. She's not a New Jerseyan, I guess. And so
That's
therefore
correct.
You're helping out a citizen from another state, which is unprecedented. Most people would never do that. And so God bless you for doing that. But first of all, I am intrigued by this whole PTI thing. Is it a selective, discretionary thing, or is it afforded to everybody?
Unfortunately, it is up to the prosecutor in the state of New Jersey to determine whether, in fact, that is to be offered. And I can't make a better example than Ray Rice being a woman beater, and this woman being just a legal gun owner. One is offered pretrial intervention, and the other is not. So, again, I just don't feel that the scales of justice were balanced in this case. I also want to add that I think it's very unreasonable for any anyone traveling into the state of New Jersey, and we get a lot of tourists here at the Jersey Shore, and we're encouraging tourism and want people to come into our state. But I have to tell you that I don't believe it's reasonable for anyone to know the gun laws of all 50 states. And you come into New Jersey, and New Jersey doesn't recognize the legal permitting gun laws in other states. So, you know, there is no reciprocity here. It's a patchwork of laws. And, for example, she was in Pennsylvania. She was her home state is Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania has reciprocity with 30 other states in this nation to recognize their gun laws, reciprocity. If she travels any of those 30 states, she would not have had this problem. But because she came next door to New Jersey, and New Jersey does not have that reciprocity, we don't recognize other states' gun laws, she did not know, she was not aware that she couldn't come into the state with her handgun that was legally purchased, but she didn't know that she could carry that across state lines. Now she faces a mandatory prison term just for coming into the state with a legally owned and possessed handgun for protection.
Now, and so here's what, to me, the shame of it all. You know, you hear attorneys, and this is why, people listen up, this is why somebody who's completely innocent sometimes needs an attorney, needs to listen to an attorney, needs to just shut up. This young lady, a law-abiding citizen, a single mother of two kids, volunteered that she had this gun and a gun permit, and it caused her all these problems because she was trying to do the right thing.
And not only do the right thing, be totally honest. She wasn't even answering the officer's questions. She volunteered the information, and she learned that when she went to the training class in order for her to purchase the handgun for her protection. She learned that in class, that if you are stopped by an officer, you let the officer know and carry your permit with you that, A, you have a legally possessed, permitted handgun. You show the officer that permit. They have training, and she did everything by the book. Unfortunately, New Jersey doesn't recognize Pennsylvania laws, and therefore she faces 42 months in prison. No discretion in this case.
So really, the only discretion that they have is to do the same thing that they did with Ray Rice, is to put him on this probation program. That's it.
Yeah, it's a pretrial intervention, but that's not a decision of the court. That's before you get to court. That's a decision of the prosecutor who will prosecute a case in court. And the prosecutor has the discretion right now in the state of New Jersey to determine who gets pretrial intervention. The common denominator to qualify for pretrial intervention in the state of New Jersey is you have no previous criminal record. In both cases, Ray Rice, the Baltimore Ravens running back who assaulted and beat his wife, he did not have any criminal record. And Shanine Allen, likewise, did not have a criminal record. One is given pretrial intervention. One is given 46 days in jail and facing a mandatory 42 months in prison for not having any criminal behavior or intent.
Right. And I want to point this out. The only difference between both these people is one is obviously a male NFL. I don't know if he's a star, but he's employed by the NFL. So forgive me if he's a really good athlete. I just don't keep up with the
he's
NFL.
He's a pro. He's
okay.
Good.
Yeah, well, yeah, obviously he's a pro because he's at that level. But anyway,
right.
Bottom line is, so one guy, so the only difference between these two is that one's male, one's female. Now, you can argue that one's male working for the NFL, the other's female working, for nobody famous. And this is what's causing this problem, because that's the only thing difference. They're both black. They both don't have a criminal background. This is both their first offense in front of this New Jersey court. So obviously the conclusion that I'm drawing is that Shanine Allen is being treated differently because, A, she has no money. She's not working for the NFL. You know, that's my conclusion. I don't know what anybody else would draw from that.
And, of course, the other thing, she couldn't post a bail, but the NFL, not the prosecutor in the case, but the NFL suspended Ray Rice 2 games, and he has to pay a fine it's in the six figures. It's over $100,000 fine. But when you have a multi-million dollar annual contract, certainly you know, Ray Rice has the means to make those kind of payments. Shanine Allen, on the other case, holds 2 jobs and a medical position, a phlebitis. But I am only making this comparison because I just don't think the scales of justice are balanced here. And I think
they're not. This is clearly two people being given different treatments because, again, you have the same judge, the same prosecutor. There's no, you know, I mean, the differences in this case are really minute. And I guess the only other inference that you could draw is that it's okay to beat somebody, but to carry a gun, a legally permitted gun, into New Jersey, well, that is just an abomination. But to beat somebody unconscious, well, that's all right. You know, that, you know, so maybe the prosecutor, the judge, just think that beating your woman is definitely somehow different than a woman protecting herself. So let's talk about this. Now that you've introduced this into the New Jersey legislation, what needs to happen in order for this law to maybe help Shanine Allen, if that's even going to, you know, because I know sometimes these things don't happen overnight. It takes weeks, months.
That's right. In New Jersey, we do have a part-time legislature by constitution. However, after Labor Day here in September, the New Jersey legislature will be back in session. Now, I know that this is a very small window of opportunity, but there is hope. There's hope that through programs such as this and the national attention that this case is getting, that the New Jersey legislature will consider this bill in a very timely fashion and within hopefully about a month, because October 6th is her jury trial. And it is my hope that the legislature will, you know, expediently consider this legislation. It is possible. We can go through both the houses, that is the Assembly and the Senate, and get it to Governor Christie. I'm quite confident that, and I have not spoken personally to Governor Christie in New Jersey on this particular bill, but Governor Christie did make national news when he, in a very similar case, recently commuted the sentence of an out-of-state resident who it was national news. His name is Brian Atkin. In 2009, after the governor took office in the state of New Jersey, Brian Atkin moved back to New Jersey from the state of Colorado. In very similar circumstances to the Shanine Allen case, he had in his car, as he was traveling back from Colorado, got into New Jersey, and he had a firearm that was in the trunk of his car, volunteered the information to law enforcement. However, just as in the Shanine case, there's no discretion. He was sentenced to a mandatory prison term, and then the governor commuted. And as you know, governors and presidents have that constitutional authority to commute certain sentences, and that's what Governor Christie did. He did the right thing, and I am hopeful that we can address this in expedient fashion in the state of New Jersey and bring justice to this young woman.
Yes, yes, because she really needs, you know, some help here, and this is not just for this young lady, but it's going to be for other people who have a legal permit from another state, who have no criminal background, no criminal intent, who are going to drive through or visit, you know, the great state of New Jersey, and all of a sudden they're going to find themselves in a completely different world of trouble. I mean, this is just terrible. And, you know, and I just think that it gives New Jersey a black eye.
I just
cannot believe that this judge and this prosecutor are not being a little bit more lenient.
Bert, as you said, you know, we want to encourage tourists to come to the great state of New Jersey, especially to the Jersey Shore and to our casinos and other attractions. But unfortunately, someone who may be legally permitted in their own state and travel across a state line into New Jersey could unfortunately face time in jail rather than time on the Jersey Shore, and we need to change that.
Yes, you do. And you know what? I want to applaud you for stepping up and helping change this law. And hopefully, two things will happen. Either the legislature will make things happen, and Shanine's law will be enacted. And you know what? I should ask you this, though. So let's just say that everything works out perfectly, and all of a sudden, Shanine's law is now a law. Will it affect her? Because she's obviously going to have this going on prior to the law kicking in. So will it retroactively kick in?
The provisions of the bill, unfortunately, would not be retroactive. However, what could be very helpful in this case is that since this is a jury trial, the attorney, Mr. Knappen, Evan Knappen is her attorney, he will have an opportunity to inform the jury that there is legislation pending in the state of New Jersey, and that if enacted, it would provide the court, the jury themselves, with the discretion. And that's what we need to, I think, emphasize in the fact if we do not get the legislation passed prior to the hearing of October 6th or the trial, I am hopeful that just the mere fact that an attorney on her behalf could let these jurors know, fellow citizens, that we have recognized that this law needs to be amended. There's certainly unintended consequences in cases such as this with the Shanine Allen case, and therefore we need to hopefully provide, in this case, a not guilty sentence for Shanine Allen. But I do think just having that information and knowing that there is a bill pending, there is the possibility of the legislation, I think that will show that we need to provide certainly discretion in this case.
All right, Assemblyman Ron Dancer, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing. Anytime you want to come back on the show and update us or anything like that about any subject matter, you're more than welcome. I appreciate your time and appreciate you stopping by.
I'll certainly take advantage of that, especially with the October 6th trial coming up. Look forward to it. Thank you, Bert.
All righty. Guys, that wraps it up. Amazing stuff happening. And thank goodness for people like Assemblyman Ron Dancer, who is stepping in to try to prevent a miscarry of justice. Guys, I want you to, you know, maybe if you have time, send a letter, an email, or something to the judge or the prosecutor in this case, and let your voices be heard. Let's not let Shanine Allen, a good person, go to prison for 3.5 years. Think about that. Take action. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch, and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.